Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
Most of us would agree that a hazard ratio in the 0.5s range is very impressive and has the potential to be practice changing.
Today, Drs. Callahan Yuan joined the podcast to discuss ASCO 2025, insights into HER2-positive breast cancer, Destiny Breast 09, Patina, mini trial, and more in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All the opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Rena Callahan. I'm a hematologist-oncologist and associate clinical professor of medicine at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA.
And I am Dr. Yuan Yuan. I'm a breast medical oncologist and the director of breast oncology at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center.
We're joining you today from Chicago, where we're attending the 2025 ASCO annual meeting. There's been a lot of exciting data presented so far, and today we're going to discuss the most compelling studies and emerging therapies in HER2-positive breast cancer. Ready to get started?
Yes, absolutely.
I'd like to begin by asking you about what abstracts or presentations really caught your attention in the space of HER2-positive disease. For example, Destiny Breast 09?
Yes, this is the most exciting data presented this morning. In fact, in the frontline HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer, Destiny Breast 09 for the first time showed the combination of antibody-drug conjugate trastuzumab deruxtecan in combination with pertuzumab showed a remarkable progression-free survival benefit of 41 months, in contrast with patient who received THP, which is docetaxel in combination with pertuzumab and trastuzumab, which showed a significant 14 months of benefit.
Yeah, I thought that was, you know, we expected it to be positive, right? Because we knew that it was going to be a positive trial a while ago, but we were eagerly awaiting the actual numbers. And so, you know, that difference goes along with a 44% reduction in the risk of disease progression or death, you know, a hazard ratio of 0.56. We were making bets actually on what hazard ratio we would find impressive. And I think most of us would agree that a hazard ratio in the 0.5s range is very impressive and has the potential to be practice changing. One thing that I thought though was interesting is how well the control arm group did. What do you think about that?
I am very impressed by the control arm had a significant progression-free survival of 29 months, which if you recall, the historical data of Cleopatra showed 18.5 months. So now we need to take a deeper look at the patient population. For example, I recall about 50% of the patient had a de novo stage 4 HER2-positive breast cancer. That means it's not a typical U.S. population. So I think there's some interesting twist of the data, how to interpret it in our modern treatment era.
Right, absolutely. And there's also, you know, the third arm, I think, that just has the TDXD, so we'll see how that evolves over time, as well as overall survival data. But until we get overall survival data, what do you think about this endpoint that we've been seeing more and more called PFS2?
That's a very important landmark endpoint. Now, before we can see the overall survival data, which may take a longer time, I think that is perhaps the best signal we can get regarding the efficacy of this drug. Now, I wasn't sure if FDA would approve the drug based on PFS2, but I think we have seen over and over that PFS2 in the recent trials had taken a lot of attention.
Right, because as you said, it's a marker, an early look at whether subsequent therapies at the end of the day make a difference. So, you know, PFS2, the time to the second progression. But one of the things that I consider when looking at PFS2 is what do we know about the patients on the trial and their subsequent lines of therapy? So in the case of Destiny Breast 09, it was mentioned that very few patients in the control arm actually ended up getting TDXD, you know, only about 10% or so. So I think that that does not necessarily represent a real-world setting, at least, you know, in the United States, where you would be able to get TDXD second line and pretty quickly.
I think that's a major consideration when you consider how to adapt to this newer option for the front line. And a lot of oncologists are listening to the talk and actually was scratching their head. I had exactly same question. I hope eventually we will have some readout, like PFS2 may help us to tease this out. So Rena, let me ask you a question. What's your impression regarding keeping the patient on many cycles of TDXD? In contrast with Cleopatra, you can typically stop after 6 cycles of THP and patient can enjoy very durable minimum toxicity, you know, that duration on HP.
Yeah, I mean, we all have patients in our practice who you received THP basically as soon as it was available, you know, now over 10 years ago, who have been living a pretty normal life on their maintenance HP, which I have patients who have stopped coming in every 3 weeks and kind of come in here and there, go on long vacations, things like that, but they're living very normally. And this is very different than what was, at least how it was studied in DESTINY-Breast09, where it's treatment with TDXD until progression. You know, so that's 41 months, or at least for most of the patients, 41 months being on TDXD. And with our antibody drug conjugates, they are very effective, but we can't lose sight of the fact that they have toxicities or toxicity profile that's pretty similar to chemotherapy. You know, in the case of TDXD, you're not getting a whole lot of neutropenia, so usually you don't have to use growth factors, but nausea is a significant treatment-associated AE. The potential for interstitial lung disease, though, that generally happens a little sooner. But I have patients on TDXD, even who have been getting it, you know, in the second, third lines, who really do have their quality of life impaired with the TDXD, at least if you compared it to something like HP, which I think most of us can agree is extremely well tolerated.
Are you aware of any trials testing the idea of upfront TDXD, perhaps induction therapy followed by a maintenance trial?
Yeah, so I think that this is where it's at. I think this is very interesting. So there's a trial called Demeter in which there will be an induction phase of TDXD. I believe it's for about 6 cycles, then followed by the maintenance HP and I think endocrine therapy. And I think that those trials will hopefully give us some data upon which then we can make a decision on a patient-by-patient basis about balancing that long PFS with tolerability. And, you know, we want to have our cake and eat it too. So it would be great if these studies showed that we could do that.
Yeah, that would be a brilliant idea, especially we know that TDXD usually reaches plateau the response around 6 cycles or perhaps even shorter. I think I would look forward to those data to really guide how to integrate these data of DESTINY-Breast09 into our practice.
Yeah, and you know, one other thing, we probably both have patients who have had their induction THP and then present at some point on HP with CNS only progression. And so I do want to integrate TDXD into the first line because I do think that there's potential there to try to prevent that kind of progression. What do you think?
I completely agree with you. And then interestingly, recently we've seen emerging data of incorporating target therapy into the maintenance phase, perhaps will help us to delay or reduce the chance of brain metastasis. Let's talk about that. So what's your impression from the Patina study from last San Antonio 2024?
Right. So I think that this is where that whole maintenance, I was blown away and had integrated it into my practice. You know, having that progression-free survival of about 44 months, starting from the time where they've completed their chemotherapy, so starting from the time that they're starting their maintenance, I mean, that is extremely long. And you don't have to sacrifice quality of life. Adding a CDK inhibitor, especially the CDK inhibitor palbociclib, with which we've used since 2015, you know, we're very familiar with the side effects. I think that it's very well tolerated, has little impact on quality of life. And to get that kind of prolongation of progression-free survival, I think immediately was a real opportunity to change practice and help our patients.
I completely agree. And also, I think in the future, we would like to see the subset analysis from DESTINY-Breast09 to look at hormone receptor positive HER2 positive versus HR negative HER2 positive disease. I do think, look at the Patina's impressive progression-free survival benefit of 44 months, even for DESTINY-Breast09 has not beat that number.
Right.
Now, in this ASCO 2025, we see continued data in the hormone receptor positive HER2 positive space. Maybe you can discuss a bit about a mini trial.
Yeah, so this was interesting. I wasn't, you know, looking for this trial. I just happened to be there when this trial was presented, and with Patina on the mind, paid attention to this trial. So it was single-arm study, ribociclib, trastuzumab, and endocrine therapy in hormone receptor positive, HER2 positive advanced breast cancer, right? So in this trial, the progression-free survival was 30 months, which is good, especially when we're using that, you'd mentioned it earlier, that 18 and a half month benchmark in CLEOPATRA. And the benchmark is shifting a little bit for various reasons, but I think we can agree that 30 months is a long time, especially if you're not proving that this strategy, potentially followed by a more aggressive strategy that involves chemotherapy, at the end of the day, improves overall survival.
That's absolutely correct. And also, I wanted to point it out that Patina has a initial induction phase, and mini trial do not have chemo right. at all. So this is chemo-free regimen. So that's have that in mind. So that number makes sense. What about the other upcoming HER2-targeted ADC? We have some data presented at this ASCO meeting as a poster this morning. RC48, for example, is a upcoming HER2 target therapy with a vedotin payload. So maybe you can discuss a bit about, in a very heavily pretreated population, what are we seeing the number here?
Yeah, so in a heavily pretreated population, to get a median PFS approaching 8 months is pretty good and warrants further study. I think, you know, in this trial, patients had at least 2, but up to 13 lines of prior therapy. So there's a range of how heavily pretreated they were. One thing that I think is interesting about this molecule is that we have a lot of molecules late in development, antibody drug conjugates, to HER2, to TROP2, and then the payloads target topoisomerase, and this one doesn't. So I think that when we're thinking about sequencing antibody drug conjugates, it's nice and it would be interesting to have an ADC with a different type of payload.
Yeah, that is, you hit it right on the nail. So we know that there has been exponential growth in the last few years, but if you dissecting those ADC structure, a lot of them share the same payload. So that creates a lot of complicated concerns regarding payload resistance. I think this is another perhaps more than welcomed agent in the later. Now we know the trend of ADC drug development. We saw Asendo Ford, for example, presented yesterday. We know that if we bring these drugs to upfront setting, we see better response rate or better outcome. How about neoadjuvant setting? Have you heard any upcoming trials such as DESTINY-Breast11?
Right. So Destiny Breast 11, I mean, what I know about it, right, is what everybody knows about it, is that there was some positive data, a trial comparing TDXD in the neoadjuvant setting or TDXD followed by chemo in the neoadjuvant setting with, and then the chemo would be THP versus ACTHP. And so I think that that was interesting how the control arm was ACTHP. I think that, you know, my own practice differs from that. I'm glad that it was positive, but I have, you know, some concerns about what the control arm actually was. What about you?
For the last two decades, or maybe longer, we have been trying to use anthracycline-free regimen. So if we were to design the trial, you and I probably will agree we'll use TCHP as a control, which is our gold standard in U.S. currently. Right. So we're looking forward to the data in ESMO or San Antonio 2025.
Right. Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I think that brings us to the end of our discussion. We could go on all day, right? But I'm sure both of us have places we need to be. But thank you so much for joining today, Yuan. Great discussion. I always enjoy speaking with you about new data and fleshing it out.
My pleasure, Rina. I enjoyed it as well.
And thank you for joining our discussion on the highlights of HER2-positive breast cancer from ASCO 2025. Please join us for more HER2-positive breast cancer highlights from ASCO 2025 in the next video.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Pandora, Apple Podcast, or TuneIn. You can also download our Amazon Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my Flash Briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Callahan and Yuan. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.